First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
On that one. Meantime, Ed Martin appears to be running late. He should be joining us momentarily. He still runs that business Barack Obama built for him, as I always say. So, you know, sometimes it runs a couple minutes over. But he should be here shortly. In the meantime, for you guys listening to the show, remember the call-in numbers as always, 858-683-1326 or area code 502-805-0334. And for you guys in the listening queue, don't forget to hit that number one on your dial pad. And if you don't want to be heard on there and you don't want to listen, you know, through the queue, that's fine. Go ahead and sign in. Join our live chat. We always have the live chat open as well. And you can let your opinion be known that way as well. We usually try to get as much of that on air as we can. So, anyway, welcome once again. I tell you, filing deadline for candidates here in Louisville is tomorrow. Today is January the 27th. 2014. Tomorrow at 4 p.m. is the filing deadline to run for office in Kentucky. And it's amazing that 2 days before the deadline, actually just a matter of less than 24 hours before the deadline, no one, no Republican or Democrat has signed up to challenge current Louisville Mayor Democrat Greg Fisher. No one has signed up. It's incredible to me that this hasn't happened. I've spoken with the local Republican Party many times over this. Nathan Haney, the executive committee chairman, I've spoken to other people to wonder why no one is stepping up to the plate. And quite frankly, it makes no sense to me that no one has decided to take on this mayor. This mayor who appears to be anything but a good mayor. He appears to be racist, in my opinion. He appears to not really care one iota about anything other than the East End and his own family, including his sister Lynn Fisher. And so I want you to stand up and take him on. I really don't get that. But as you can tell from the cough in the background, Mr. Martin has joined us. How are you, sir?
Well, doing all right, sir. Had to as you well know, I was sitting there having some fun on Facebook with your pals, David Willock.
Yeah, I saw
that. Then I realized, hey, it's going to be 2 below 0 tonight, and I knew the fire in the wood-burning stove was kind of fading, and as it goes, if it gets cold, Mama gets unhappy, and when Mama unhappy, everybody's unhappy. So I had to go stoke the fire real quick.
Well, I know how that one goes, believe me. I tell you, I'm just finding it fascinating that so few candidates are willing to take on incumbents, primarily in a mayor's race. There's a bunch of metro council races that incumbents are being unopposed. I don't understand why nobody stepped up to the plate for mayor. Now, as I announced last week, after being, asked to take that and run for mayor, I realize that right now, just simply, there's no time for that with the business and everything else that's going on. And I made the decision not to. It was a hard decision to make, don't get me wrong, because I always step up to the plate when asked, and in this particular case, I just simply couldn't. So it just finally, it amazes me that so many people are out there and no one is stepping up to the plate to take him on. But, you mentioned the fun you're having with our good friend Jacob Payne over at the Bill Boyce. I got to tell you.
No,
I'm
having fun with David Whitlock.
Exactly.
It's just one of those rare moments when you and Jake Payne are both just having a ball with it, too. It's like everybody's holding hands and singing Kumbaya. And I actually had a little fun with another one of the show's friends, Thomas McAdams. He swiped that article and put it on, and I put it on his wall. It's like, he may look dumb, but it's just a disguise. He's a mastermind in the ways of espionage.
Well, that's it. For those of you who don't know, former Jefferson County Constable David Whitlock was run out of office for illegally shooting at an unarmed woman in a Walmart parking lot. He was put on a 2-year diversion program that expired in December of 2013. This was not his first diversion program. For anybody who wants to know any and all things David Whitlock, go to edspringston.com, and in the search engine on the top left, type in David Whitlock, and it will tell you everything about this guy. This guy has been involved in so many illegal things and other crap. He's already been on diversion once for theft. Now he got diversion for shooting an unarmed woman, and he continues to avoid jail. But now that his sentence, his diversion program, his latest one, was completed in December of 2013, the case is automatically been dismissed.
You need a drum roll for what you're about to announce.
Yeah. You know, that's the one thing I don't have loaded up. I apologize for that, folks.
Yeah, we'll do it National Lampoon style.
David Whitlock has just announced he will run for Metro Council in the 3rd District and is going to take on Democrat incumbent Mary Woolridge. You didn't hold your drum roll long enough, man. But,
okay.
But this is the problem with politics in Louisville. This asinine stuff continues to happen, and this clown will probably get some sort of votes. What do we say about this?
Oh, by the same token, so will Mary Woolridge will probably beat him. But, I mean, here's Mary. I won't vote to penalize a fellow black person, Woolridge. I mean, she's a racist.
It's phenomenal. I mean, as part of his plea agreement to take diversion, he had to agree that he was no longer allowed to work in law enforcement. That closed the door on any kind of a constable race. But everybody was short-sighted and really underestimated the arrogance of this criminal, David Whitlock, and never even thought about the fact he might try to run for some other office. It's just insulting.
I tell you what, Ed, to be honest, I don't know that it's arrogance. I mean, I'll be real honest. I don't know anybody as dumb as this guy seems to be.
You got a point.
But if I did, I would probably try to talk somebody like if David Whitlock was my friend, as they say, just for shits and giggles, I'd probably get a few beers in him and just try to convince him he can win that race, just so I could sit back and laugh my ass off at it.
Let me tell you, David actually thinks he can win that race, or he wouldn't get in the race. This is nothing more than this guy not being held accountable to anything. Since he can no longer allow himself to be run for constable or have any kind of law enforcement duties, which gave him what he thought was protection, he figures the next best thing is a Metro Council. If he's a council member, then he'll be protected. That's all this is about. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. And it's incredible to me that we accept this as part of the norm in Louisville politics. It drives me nuts. And yet we can't find one person to stand up and take on this other guy who I believe has some serious problems and some serious issues and don't care about the people, incumbent Democratic Mayor Greg Fisher. It's insulting. That's all there is to it. I just don't get it. You know, maybe I never will, Ed, but I tell you, there are so many.
You know, I'll just tell you straight up, part of the dilemma that I wrestle with is part of it is the people that you would want to see do it, they tend to be busy. And the reason you want to see them do it is because they're successful at other endeavors, whether it's business or some kind of charitable organization or something like that. And they tend to be busy. And the fact that politics is so damned expensive, you know, and like in my case, I've told people before, it's like, yeah, could I put the money up to run a race of some sorts? It's like, yeah, I could. But I work kind of hard for my money, so
right.
I can definitely think of better things to spend it on that, you know, would be more of a benefit to my family and my coworkers and my co-owners. I think that's where you're at. I mean, people look at the last mayor's race and how expensive it was, and it was wide open. And they kind of look at it and think, okay, whatever Al Heinrich spent, double it because you're up against an incumbent. And there's just few people who want to go there.
But that makes the argument even so much greater and why we need to get rid of the current way that we run elections in this state. Because if we can find somebody within the two-party system, and we always talk about the uniparty, and they are, that are unwilling to engage and give the voters a choice, then it's time for our state Congress, our state legislature, to say, you know what? We need to make it fair for independents, Green Party, Libertarians, whatever you want to call yourself. We need to level the playing field and give them the same equal opportunity to run for office as the two-party candidates have now. And that this is exactly why. Because we cannot have no choices for the electorate because the parties are scared to do their job and run on their record or run on what they believe the party is there for. We have hundreds of thousands of independents throughout this country, not just in Kentucky, who should be given an equal opportunity to do the same damn thing, to run for office and let their voice be heard so that we, the people, have a choice. You know, this is exactly one of the reasons we fight that.
I know you're right that there are no shortage of independents and third-party guests who, if the barriers weren't so big, they'd hop right in. They wouldn't have a lot of money, but they'd hop right in. They're up for a good fight. I know a lot of them. But I think, you know, the other problem you run into is you've got the Courageless Journal, the Career Journal. You've got,
right.
and most of the TV stations, they have their own set of impediments set up to you. So if you don't have any money, doesn't matter what you do, you can't get any print or media. Yeah, so but still, you're right. If it was two signatures for a libertarian or an independent or a constitution or green or socialist or whatever to get on the ballot, we'd have a full ballot. And at least in some of the debates, it would probably get pretty damn interesting. You know,
it would.
A socialist party and a libertarian and a Democrat all on the same stage, that could get interesting, you know, entertaining at least, but... Yeah, it's a mess, and you know, even though I'm a Republican now, I find that if nobody, you know, and this is something they've got to think strategically. You let a mayor run a race uncontested in both, you know, a Democrat and in a general election, then that's money that the Democrat Party can then invest in other races. So they're going to shellack you. So I mean, throughout the party, they ought to find somebody that they can give a reasonable amount of support, and they can look at them and say, oh, okay, cool. this person may not win, but they won't embarrass us. And
well, you know,
to me it's offensive to some degree that they're as far as I know, they're not asking around.
Well, it is offensive. And I tell you, you know, I ran in 2006 as an independent, so I know how hard that is to run. Yeah, you're right about the media. Because when I ran, I mean, I announced my intention to run probably before Kelly Downer did when we decided to go after Jerry Abramson, you know, and I couldn't get any media attention at all. You know, probably around July, August, somewhere in that time frame, I finally got my first bit of media attention when I was on Joe Elliott late night show when he was at WHAS. And Joe Elliott gave me an opportunity to be heard. And that opened up the door to a little bit. Then I was interviewed by Mark Hebert at WHAS 11. And once that happened, the WLKY wanted an interview. But it was real quick hits. They didn't give me the same opportunities that were given to Jerry Abramson and Kelly Downard. I wasn't allowed in any public debates or discussions at all until the two main ones at the end of the race. You had the League of Women Voters, and you also had the NAACP. Raoul Cunningham has set up a debate sponsored by the NAACP down at Missouri Middle School. That was the first debate I was invited. It was the first debate I was allowed in, I should say. And it was televised. And I kicked their butt. Every person said so. It's not me. I'm not that cocky. But everybody was like, wow, he really knows what he's talking about. He's got some great ideas. And then, of course, that led to me being given the opportunity on a second televised debate and going on to WLKY that was sponsored by the League of Women Voters. But that was the last 3 months of the election. Kelly Downard and Jerry Abramson had been out there getting in every event, every public event, every public debate, everything. The media was following around like lap dogs and discounted me until it was too late to make a difference. I know what that's like, and that's what bothers me now, because we don't have anybody within the two-party system that's willing to challenge incumbents. And we shut down in this state people that are outside the two-party system, the independents, by putting crap on them that it's just too hard to overcome. Gatewood had to collect, I think it was 5,000 signatures to even be given the opportunity to run for governor. But if you're one of the two-party candidates, you have to have two signatures. Two, not 2,000. You know, our good friend Ken Mulman, I think he had to have a couple thousand signatures to run for state office.
He was in the 5,000 range, too. Statewide range
there you go.
5,000 signatures.
There you go. And then you've got Michael Lewis of Independent Kentucky. He had to have, you know, 100 signatures to run in a race that only required two on a local level. So, you know, and then, of course, you get into the argument with the automatic straight ticket voting, where there are actually people running for office getting votes that nobody knows or cares for. They're getting votes because of this straight ticket voting thing. So we're not being forced to choose
be,
even between
the
candidates we have.
In the past, that would be David Whitlock.
You betcha. You betcha.
Yep.
It's the past, present, and the future. And that's the problem. We have to overcome these things.
I agree. The two-party system is a mess, and it's definitely tilted to severely limit choices. But I'm going to be honest. I'm a little aggravated with the Republican Party. I'm a fairly new member. But if a lot of these races look like they're going to go uncontested. I mean, granted, you know, I understand primaries, but if they don't put anybody up to take on the mayor or, you know, or a bunch of Democrats are running unopposed when all it really requires is, you know, less than $500 and 2 signatures to put a name on the ballot, then there should be a name in every race. They should... You know, let's face it, there are a lot of blowhards out there in the Republican Party and a lot of suck-ups who, you know, if they're really party people, they should buck up and say, you know, I'm just going to be a paper candidate, but there needs to be an R in that race.
Well, I don't believe in a paper candidate thing, but there's so many people who think they can make a difference, but the problem is people are scared to have that L behind their name. And that doesn't stand for libertarian. It stands for loser. Nobody wants to be a loser. Nobody wants to lose. You know, when I ran in 2006, I knew going in that it was going to be the greatest uphill battle I would ever attempt in any election I ever decided to do. I also knew, I was fairly confident, that I was going to lose that race. But the people who weren't being represented deserved a voice. And they deserved an opportunity to be heard. And that was the reason for that race, to make sure that those people had that voice and could be heard. And that's the problem. And by the way, I want to mention one other race, too, while I'm thinking about it, and then we'll get into some other stuff. But our good friend Ray Pierce over at Stop It, he is actually John Yarmuth. So John Yarmuth now has a primary, which I thought was great to hear. Let's go to the phones, because I think this is our good friend Ken Molman. Am I right?
It is indeed. It is indeed. How you guys doing?
Wow. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I, of course, always interested in the talk of busting the duopoly up. But, I did run in 2011 statewide. Ed was right, Martin, it was right that I had to collect 5,000 plus. I actually collected over 8,200, and the Republicans still tried to sue me off the ballot.
Right.
They failed. They gave up. But the one thing that came out of that race, this getting rid of the treasurer's office, which was what I ran on in 2011, and it had been run on a platform that had been run on by Democrats and Republicans in the past, I think it really brought the issue back to the surface, and I'm being told this thing's going to go. I'm being told it's going to pass. So I guess the point is that even in a race where the odds are very, very against you, and even though, you're getting way outspent, as long as you're able to focus your message and focus on a handful of key issues, you can actually affect public policy and talk about the things that need to be talked about and get that out there. And then it's, at the end of the day, it's up to the voters to decide whether or not they're going to try to, push for those things and hold the other elected leaders accountable.
I'll agree with that, Ed.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was a joke that I had made right after the election. And, of course, the Republicans didn't win in spite of outspending the Democrats 2-1. But as soon as they got into session, the Republicans put a bill up that year. I remember it said they were going to, they put a bill up, said let's do away with the state treasurer's office. And I was having a little friend on social media and other places saying, damn, what do you know? Ken won. he won. I thought he lost. He made a hell of a killing, but damn it, turns out Ken must have won because they're talking his stuff.
That bill had been filed before. It was a refile of a previous bill. Damon Thayer had proposed it in the past, and he brought it back up after my race in 2012. This time, it's sponsored by Chris McDaniel, who's from up here in my neck of the woods. He's a freshman senator. And I talked to Chris about it recently, and I'm very excited about this. I mean, I don't want to claim credit. I don't care how it gets done. There comes a point where you got to take a stand and do the right thing, and even though you might lose,
right,
as long as you push the conversation the right way, you've won. And at the end of the day, I don't care who gets credit. I don't care that I lost. I'm more worried that, we're going to save. That office is spending over $3 million a year. That's not the silver bullet. There are no silver bullets for our budget. There are no silver bullets for our problems in the state. There's not one single issue that's like, oh, yeah, if we had that, it'd be all better. But it's a start. And so that's one. And now let's go to the other 99 things we need to knock down.
Well, and I think that's a very good point, because everybody's looking for this quick fix. And what we really have to understand is that we've got this for a long time. Fix this overnight with the temporary Band-Aid solutions, which is what they normally do. We have to take this a step at a time. And for me, one of the biggest steps we can take as an electorate, as citizens in this Commonwealth and across this country, for me, one of the biggest steps we can take is basically to let freedom sit here and go ahead and open up elections so that we can get candidates to choose from. Same recycle people over and over and over. And, as Einstein once said, the definition of insanity is repeating the same behavior over and over and expecting a different result. And that's exactly what we do. So we got to figure out how to change this. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's also a distinct difference between the Uniparty, the Democrats and Republicans, and versus the independents, the libertarians, the third party types. is the reason people are in third parties, the reason they're independents, is generally for an ideology. They mm-hmm. feel that strongly about it. I think in a lot, and therefore, like Ken said, like it was with me when I was a libertarian, you're not afraid to lose. You just want to fight the good fight. I mean, you feel strongly enough about it, you don't participate in a two-party system. So these are the people you need in the elections because they're ready to drag it out. Now, conversely, I think when you get people that are whatever you want to call them, Klingons, climbers, whatever, that are in given parties, you know, professional butt kissers and all that other stuff, when they're right. in a given party, they're in it because somewhere down the road they're playing to move up and eventually position themselves to run a race and win. And therefore, I think sometimes maybe you see that the people in the major parties, I think you're right, Ed, they're more interested in winning something late down the road than an ideology. So they really don't want to lose, no matter what the reason, no matter, as Ken says, whether they make it better or not. They just don't want to be a candidate that, you know, has a D or an R behind their name and get shellacked.
Well, and
that can harm and hamper their attempts to climb.
Well, and the key problem with that is what you end up with is an echo chamber. You know, there may be people trying to climb the ladder that have really good ideas, but they're afraid to speak them because everybody else isn't talking about it. And
right.
so what happens is you end up with echo chambers, and you end up with bumper sticker slogans and stupidity and partisanship that doesn't need to exist. There are issues out there that the vast majority of Kentuckians agree on. I mean, you look at the industrial hemp issue and how 70% of Kentuckians support industrial hemp, and it still almost didn't pass. I mean, there was a partisan attempt to block that because somebody was going to get the credit and not somebody else, and that's the silliness of it all.
It's still not passed.
What's that?
It hasn't went through the Senate yet. It still may not pass.
No, the industrial hemp did pass. Industrial hemp passed last year. We have the framework in place. Now we're waiting on the feds.
I apologize. I'm thinking about the marijuana issue this year. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, no. Yeah, the marijuana issue, that's a little tougher of an uphill climb because it doesn't have such
right.
large, broad-based support.
Right.
But again, that is an issue that on the medical side, you know, we're above 50% support on the medical side. And, you know, I hope that people will put the fear-mongering and the partisanship aside and really look at the issue on its merits. And that's really the problem is the climbers are worried about several things that are not us, right? They're worried about making sure they're in good with the party. They're making sure that everybody's
right.
bobbing their head, yeah, that's it, and nobody's thinking. And what we need right now is a lot more thought and a lot more creative solutions to solve our state's problems. We've got a lot of problems in this state. And when you trap people in the two-party system and they built the system to really discourage an outside voice, you're not getting that free information or free flow of ideas. That's really what we need. We need ideas. We need solutions.
And we're not going to get those long keep reciting. And if you can, Ken, I'm being asked in the chat room by somebody to ask you to restate that bill talk when we first started the conversation with Treasury and all that stuff. Go ahead. $3 million savings. State, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so apparently the Treasurer's Office, the bill is out there, and because I was involved in it, I've been contacted by the media. I've been told that both Republicans and Democrats are supporting this bill. Stumbo has come out and said that he's willing to get rid of the Treasurer's Office, and obviously the Republicans sponsored it in the Senate, so they're willing to get behind this as well. And apparently the budget annually is $3 million. Actually, it's $3.1 million. And largely it's spent on things. I'm trying to remember. Now, you'll have to take this unofficially, but what I had heard is that the building that they're in, because they're not in the Capitol, is costing them $100,000 a year in rent.
Yep.
And then security for the building, 24-hour security, is costing $250,000. So security costs two and a half times more than the rent. And then you've got, you know, these constitutional offices that, you know, the treasurer and the assistant treasurer, these guys are each making $113,000 a year. And you've got these legislated levels of management that have to exist in what is relatively a small office. You know, our treasurer's office in our state is extraordinarily weak because the last strong treasurer stole a bunch of money back in the 1880s and ran to China. So as a result, our treasurer is super-duper weak, and it's like 30 people that work in the office, and we're spending $3 million a year. And, you know, if you consolidate this down and make sure that you have the checks and balances in place, it's not, again, it's not a silver bullet, but it's a start. It's one thing. There's so many
other things
that we need to keep fighting.
Well, there's no doubt. And I'll tell you something else we got to start. We've got to start a commercial break. Folks, we'll be right back in just a minute. Remember, 858-683-1326. 502-805-0334 if you want to be heard on air. Call us at those numbers. For those of you in the listening queue, hit that number one. And as I always tell everybody, just join the live chat. We'll get you in there as well. You listen to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we are back for some reason. Hello, we are back, folks. For some reason, the music just decided to, hey, let's not play. Don't ask me why. All right. But anyway, we're back at the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Thanks for hanging with us. And I tell you, you know, going into break, we're talking about all these different problems, how we can save money. And you know, Ken, I'm going to leave your mic open because I really want to ask you a couple other things because you are a libertarian. You pay attention to all this partisan shit better than most. You know, when we talk about the $3.1 million that we're going to save if we eliminate the Treasury's office, I'm curious, do you know how much they pay for the partisan primaries in this state? How much does that cost us for these partisan primaries that we, the taxpayers, are paying for?
Each statewide election costs in the neighborhood of about $7 million. So the primary costs $7 million and the general election costs $7 million.
Thank you. So what I'm getting at was we're going to try to eliminate this constitutional office, and Ed Martin has dropped off for some reason. Oh, there he is. He's back now. But we're talking about eliminating this $3.1 million boondoggle. We call it the state treasurer's office. And here we've got another boondoggle we could eliminate as well if we would just go ahead and simplify our election process, either make the parties pay for their own primaries, because they're the only ones. The Republicans benefit from their primaries. The Democrats benefit from their primaries. Anybody that's not part of that two-party system loses. We don't have a choice. So when you look at that in play, that's $7 million that could be saved. If they want to have their own primary and put up their own candidate, that's great. Let the Democrats do that on their own. Let the Republicans do that on their own and put them on the list of the election in November. That way we could try to get a fairer balance for people to run for office. Is that right?
Go ahead, Ed.
I was going to say, I think so. I mean, now that I've seen some of the inner workings and got a lot of friends in the Democrat Party, too, I mean, at some point, when you look at this as an example, this primary season coming around, it can be a joke. I mean, the taxpayers are going to foot the bill. You look at all the uncontested races.
Right.
Well, it's really not going to hurt anybody. It really shouldn't hurt anybody's feelings if they just did away with the primary and let an executive committee or a candidate selection committee actually pick what will probably be really the only four or five candidates that are, you know, candidates for the four or five races that are actually contested. And
sure,
most of them are locked anyway. It's going to be like this Whitlock and Wooldridge. She's no prize, but she's going to crush him. So, you know, I think absolutely. I think we need to look at the parties and say, hey, you can just make a candidate selection committee, you know, sharpen your pencils. Most of the races really aren't that close anyway. And just tell people better luck next time, and this is our candidate, or they can pay for the primary. But it's going to be a joke. To do the per dollar amount per actual race, somebody does that extension, that is going to just be absolutely hilarious.
Well, it really is. And there you go. Go ahead, Ken.
To add on to that, you know, being with the Libertarian Party and whatnot, we pay for our own primary process. And,
right,
you know, this is something that I've looked at in detail because, you know, we don't get the benefit of the taxpayer-paid primary. And, you know, what we're looking at moving toward is sort of an Iowa caucus style. Now, in Iowa, the taxpayers don't pay for the primary. The parties have basically a whole bunch of county conventions on the same night, and they all vote. And that is at no expense to the average taxpayer. And if we want to adopt that model, that's fine. If we want to adopt, you know, the parties can adopt any model they want to. They're entities amongst themselves, and they can do whatever they choose. But
they're not. That's
the
not true. Because they can't. But that's not true, because a party can't be an entity unto itself if all of us are paying for what they do. That's always been the argument. Go ahead.
Well, and that's the problem. It's corporate welfare is essentially what
Thank
this
you.
Is. Political parties are corporations, and trust me, I know, we're incorporated here. A political party is a corporation. And so at the end of the day, giving benefits to one corporation over another is corporate welfare to the detriment of the other corporations that aren't receiving it. Now, I'm not saying that I want to even have those things. I don't think we should be providing money for parties to work on their internal candidate selection process. That should be up to
right.
the parties to determine how they want to choose their candidates and make sure the rules are set in stone ahead of time and all that good jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But that it shouldn't be on the taxpayers. I mean, if you break that down, it's basically $3.5 million per party. I guarantee you, if the parties had to pay for it themselves, they would do it a hell of a lot cheaper than $3.5 million.
They would do it the Iowa caucus way. They just rent a little hall at all these different places, let everybody come in and make their vote,
yeah.
make it a potluck dinner. I mean, that's essentially what we're looking at.
Or they would develop a database and do it online. Or, like I said,
something.
Like in this primary season, it's a joke. It's a joke. And how many are going to be uncontested? How many are going to be so lopsided it's not even really a race? And yet we're going to pay for it. All the ballots are going to be printed, enough ballots for every voter, and all the precincts are going to be fully manned, and all, you know, everything's going to be done as if it's an 80% participation voter
sure.
participation in a terribly close presidential race or something. It's going to be treated that way, and it's not. And it's, like you're saying, it's laughable.
Well, and I tell you, we've got a great example going on right now here in Louisville of what can happen when you open the field up, if you will. And this happens to deal with judge races. When Michael Connell first got elected as county attorney, as county attorney here in Kentucky, the first thing he did was change the rules we've always allowed. If an assistant prosecutor wanted to run for a judgeship or run for office, they were allowed to in the past, but Michael Connell said, if you're going to run for office, then you're not going to be able to keep your job office, too. So for the last couple of years, anybody who's wanted to run for a judgeship or for a political office really couldn't, because they still got to provide for their families and things like that. So Jefferson County Attorney Michael Connell finally did the right thing in this election cycle, and he reversed his own policy, which means that now we have assistant prosecutors running for judges. There's at least seven assistant prosecutors to date who have filed to run for district court judge. But interestingly enough, you know, now that Michael Connell has changed that policy and took it back to the way it always was, now the judges are screaming, well, this is a conspiracy because Michael Connell doesn't like us because of all the stuff we've been going back and forth on these drunk driving prosecutions. You know, Michael Connell has sent out a letter chastising the judges for letting all these drunk drivers off easily. And, so he reversed his decision now. And now that we have a choice, the judges are sitting there now, the incumbent judges, don't like it at all, including Katie King. Katie King got elected. She had the election bought and paid for it for her by her dad. Okay, there's no doubt about that. It's my opinion. You can look up the King situation at edspringster.com as well, and you'll see the evidence I put before you. But, you know, so now that Michael Connell is doing the right thing, all of a sudden he's a conspiracy guy because some of these judges, including Stephanie Pierce Burke, Katie King, and a few others, are sitting here screaming foul because they went to the bar to complain about Michael Connell chastising them, and now that his assistant prosecutors are going to challenge them, they feel like they're above the law or above the political process and shouldn't be challenged. What do you think about that?
I would say that's a shame, and the real problem is that's almost an air of elitism. You know, here's the thing. If you're a good judge or any elected official, the people should know that, and the people will reelect you. If you haven't been doing the right things, the people are going to kick you out. That's the whole purpose of having an electoral process. And if
right.
judges or any other elected official is afraid of the electoral process, then what the hell are they doing in electoral politics to begin with?
See, I'm 100% agreement with you. Ed Martin.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I maybe even a little more strongly. I look at it and it's like, okay, a judge, first and foremost, probably makes four or five times what these assistant prosecutors make. So they've got more money. They've got a machine, obviously, in place, and their names are familiar. They've won elections before. So they've got everything going for them. It's back to the old incumbency equation where unless you've really, really screwed up, you know, incumbents get elected somewhere in the 90 percentile time, you know, they run against a challenger. So I just look at that and think, okay, what in the hell are you afraid of? You know, and I think it actually smacks of politics, you know, the first time that O'Connell went and forbade his prosecutors from running, that in a way, that I have to sit back and wonder, like, was there some sort of quid pro quo going on there? It's like, okay, hey, look, I'm going to take some, people like to vote for prosecutors, I guess. And he says, I'm going to remove them from the equation and make it much more difficult for them. So wink, wink, nod, nod, who's your daddy?
Well, a lot of that was self-preservation because if they could run for office, they could challenge him. And he didn't want the challenges. You know, so, I mean, Michael Connell screwed up when he made that original decision. But now that he's corrected his own mistake, you know, and I'm not a Michael Connell fan. Everybody knows I can't stand the guy. But I've got to give him credit and give him props for finally doing the right thing and reversing his own mistake and allowing this. But what happens here is all these judges who thought they were safe because of his ruling before, you know, here's the thing for me. If you're an attorney, you're a prosecutor, you're working for a county attorney's office, you're working for the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, if you're working as a government attorney, you know, as far as how far you're going to go and everything else, very limited. Being an elected judge is the top of your profession. At least I think so. So why would you not want to aspire to go to the top of your chosen profession? That's human nature for everybody. The prosecutors were angry with Michael Connell because of his past, because of his past decision. And now they had the opportunity to get this level playing field. But then you got the judges screaming foul because now all of a sudden they have to worry about getting reelected. Judge Stephanie Pierce Burke, and I actually like Judge Burke. I think she does a good job on the bench. I'm not plugging for her. I'm just telling you that. I think she's done a pretty good job. But Judge Burke is out there saying that she believes Connell actively recruited his assistant prosecutors to run against judges like her that he don't like. You know, and according to interviews that have been done with the assistant prosecutors who are running, they laugh at it. There's no way that happens. So they refuse to acknowledge a conspiracy theory. You know, but that's what we're running into. So these judges are worried about getting reelected. And I'm like, Ken, you know, if you're worried about getting reelected, you've got this elitism going on. Then what the hell are you doing in electoral politics? I mean, let's face facts here. You know, when Katie King was elected judge, I think there were 10 people running for that position, including David Holton. And this is a nonpartisan race, supposedly, right? We all know they're all partisan. But the top two vote-getters in that primary went on to the general election. That was Judge Katie King and Judge David Holton. They faced off to get the judgeship that was open at that time. And Katie won in a runoff in the general election in November. You know, so, I mean, to sit here and think that you shouldn't be allowed competition, or to sit here and think that you're so elite that you should be given a job just because you have it, that is insulting to me as a voter. How about you?
I mean, I would go even further. You know, if you're – well, first of all, I don't – my first take would be that his ban on his people running to begin with was probably unconstitutional. You
what?
Can't say because you have this job, you can't exercise your rights. And I think that probably eventually would have got challenged otherwise. But more importantly, you know, again, we need to have more voices. We need to have more choices. And if you're artificially limiting them, you're hurting the electorate. So this is a good thing that more people are able to run, especially if they're qualified.
Well, I agree with you. And the assistants who are running for judge have been interviewed, and they said that they wanted to run before. They couldn't afford to resign to do it because Michael Collins' office policy was that you had to resign to run for office. You know, now, could they have challenged that in court? Sure. I mean, they probably should have challenged that in court and let it be ruled unconstitutional. But, you know, if I'm working for you and you're my bread and butter, am I going to go to court and cry foul over you and jeopardize my bread and butter and have you find some reason, any small thing in the world, to put me out of work so I can't provide for my family? Probably not. Most people wouldn't, because they can't afford to lose. You still have the mortgage. You still got to put food in your kids' mouths. You still got to put clothes on your wife's back. You know, all of those things that go with it. So, you know, now that Michael Connell has reversed his own mistaken policy, in my opinion, you know, that's not a conspiracy theory. It's the right thing to do. And for these assistant prosecutors who are going to run for these offices, I commend them for having the courage to stand up and run. And I disavow anything with these judges who want to sit here and cry foul and cry conspiracy, because they got their jobs in an election in the first place before this went into effect. You know, so I just don't buy any of this. So, you know, for Judge Burke and other judges, most of which I actually have a lot of respect for, you know, it's time they get over themselves and forget this elite mentality. If you want that job, then earn that job. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would actually, and everybody keeps going one step further. I would also go one step further and say that it's amateur hour, because in electoral politics, you put on a brave face. You know, whether you're going to get shellacked or not, you put on the brave face. And what these judges are doing, in spite of their preponderance and the advantages that they're working with, they're whining. They're assuming the role of the victim as an incumbent judge. So you're kind of halfway writing your opponent's commercials. if you don't mind saying, okay, here's your first commercial. Judge so-and-so is, he's afraid of a little competition. They want to maintain their elitist position and exclude other qualified candidates from running against them. Is that what you really want in a judge? Bam, you know, it's like, okay, now as a judge, you're not tough on crime. You've been tagged as a wuss.
Oh, I tell you, and you're absolutely right, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, for you assistant prosecutors who are listening to this show, hey, hire me, man. I help out in campaigns all the time, but I'm not free. You know, I mean, I could write half those commercials already just from one article. This particular article came from the Courier Journal, you know, and there's so much in this one particular article about amateur hour like you're describing it, Ed. You could write your first five commercials. I mean, it's that easy to do. So You know, and that's the thing. And you're right about, you know, not wanting to sit there and show any weakness. You know, when I was running in 2006, the media would discount me, but the question I ever got from anybody in media that I spoke with was, you know, do you honestly think you have a chance to win? Why are you in this race? Those were always the first two. And when I was asked that question, do you honestly think you have a chance to win, I answered it the same way. I'd laugh at her asking the question, or I had a smile on my face and said, why do you think I don't? If the people in this city are sick and tired of things the way that they are, and if they believe what I have to say, I have just as good a chance as anybody. Now, I knew inside that I was beat before I ever went into that election. But as I've said, it was important for the voiceless to have a voice, and I became that voice. But you don't show fear. You don't show amateur hour. And that was my first election, folks. That was the biggest amateur hour there was. But you can't do that. And I'm like you, Ed. I was really surprised that they responded this way and were willing to go on record, you know, as for lack of a better, whiny-ass titty babies. I just have a hard time with that. I really do. You know, I don't get it, and I don't.
Yeah, I think the confident judges are the ones that are going to sit back and just say, "Well, sure, good for the process. Bring it on." You know, okay. Guess what? You're halfway to getting my vote already.
There you go.
But if you back up and say, "No, I don't want any competition. I like my job," and it's like, okay, you're halfway to losing my vote.
And I agree. You know, one of the things I was raised. One saying that I learned at a very, very young age, that's been long ago, folks, believe me. I got my AARP P card today. It kind of surprised me. But one of the things that I was told growing up is you really have to understand one thing about life when you decide you're going to take on a fight. You don't fight the fight you know you can win. Anybody can do that. You fight the fight that needs fighting, and sometimes you win. You know? And I've always applied that philosophy in what I do. I fight the fight that needs to be fought. Some you win, some you lose. I've got a great track record. I win most anything I fight. But sometimes you lose, and that's okay because you stood up for the right thing when it needed to be stood up for. You know, if you want to fight the fight you know you can win, it's a great ego trip. But at the end of the day, you're not really fighting anything. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but that's the way I was raised. That's the way I was taught, and that's what I've lived as some sort of a credence my whole life. That's why I do what I do.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, it's easy to go out. I mean, if I was really interested in gaining power or being an elected official, it would be real easy to go flip to D or R, whatever, you know, in my particular electoral circumstances were, and make no mistake, many of our elected officials are DRR simply based on the electoral realities of the area. You know, that would be the easy way. There's always an easy way. If you're seeking power, if you're seeking to do things in a not-so-legitimate way, there's always the easy way. But doing things the right way is the hard way. But it's the way that needs to be done, because that's the only legitimate win is if you're doing it in a legitimate way.
I agree. Ed?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. It's just, except, granted, with my known background in rugby and martial arts, it's like sometimes I just like a good fight. sometimes you just look at somebody and just say, you know, it's been a slow week. Let's do this.
Well, you know.
I admire people who have that disposition sometimes. It's like, you want to fight? Well, you know, whether it's argue or fight or run a campaign, it's like, well, I'm not doing anything else at the moment. Sure.
I like to compare it to police. You know, when a bigger guy sees a little guy and he goes to punch him, it's because he knows he can win. He knows he can win. So he goes and picks on this little guy, knowing he can win. It gives his big ego trip about what a badass he is, and everybody knows he's a badass, so you're not going to mess with him. But when that same bully runs into somebody that's his size or bigger, And all of a sudden, he don't want to pick on that person because he doesn't know if he can win. Now, the guy that's as big as he is or bigger might be just as much of a prick as he is, but he's going to take that and allow himself to be bullied because he's scared to fight the fight that needs fighting. You know, and that's what I look at in everything, and it's like, that's why I don't understand what is going on. This great land we call America is going to crap because nobody's willing to stand up and fight the fight that needs fighting. It just bothers the heck out of me. But I tell you, one fight we don't need to have. We're running fast at the end of the hour. Chen, thank you so much, man. It's a pleasure hearing from you. I don't get to do that
thank
nearly
you,
enough on this show. And by the way, great job on KET last week. Yes, I did see that with Bill Goodman. Excellent job on that.
Thank you.
For you guys that don't know, Ken hosts his own show right here on the MVM Radio Network every Sunday night at 7 o'clock called Liberty Unbridled. And he's also a regular on places like KET and other media events around the state as a great voice for the libertarians and the independents. So we appreciate it. Ed Martin, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. You know, we're not going down to as cold as we were the other night, but completely apolitical. If you have animals or something, bring them in. We're going down to -2 tonight. And even more important than animals, hey, if you see if you know of some homeless folks or something, at the very least, drop them off a loaf of bread or something, you know, some food, some spare clothes. Just, you know, we're doing polar vortex number 3, and I can speak from personal experience. My firewood's getting kind of low. I didn't plan on going through as much at the beginning of the summer. So, you know, there's people out there that are hurting more. There's people out there that are very likely in desperate situations, and there's animals in desperate situations. So completely apolitical. And remember, there are people and animals out there that if you see and you can do just even the least little thing to help them, whether it's just let us, as we do, we actually trick our feral cats into coming in the house, and we lock them in the bathroom. You know, they're not domestic cats. They'll shred the place. We lock them in the bathroom with a litter box and some food. It's like, okay, so they're not going to die. It's all good.
Well, I'm glad you went down that road because I was just going to mention part of that myself. And we'll just stay with that for the end of this show. The bottom line is, folks, you know, for me personally, throughout my life, I have always found that it's better to give than to receive. And when times are bad, when things are bad, and you're going to get the crazy weather again tonight like we've been going through here in Louisville. And by the way, I don't know what this polar vortex crap is. When I was a kid that got this cold, we called it winter. But you know, that's just me. But, you know, there's nothing greater to do than to help either an animal or help, you know, your neighbor, your friend, the homeless. Do something to get involved because that difference you make in their life that night is something you can never, ever forget. And if sometimes you can't guarantee you, they never will. So, you know, sometimes it's better to be a giver than a receiver. And that's why we do what we do here. We're going to give you all the information. Hopefully you'll receive it and be educated. Because at the end of the day, man, no matter what political party you are, no matter what color you are, no matter anything, we're all human beings living in the same place at the same time. If we're not helping each other, who the heck's going to do it for us? That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow at 7 o'clock, right back here with Mr. Ed Martin. And, you know, we'll have some more information. We'll get into a little bit of Matt Evans tomorrow night. And some national things we didn't really get a chance to get into tonight. So we'll touch on it tomorrow night as well. Mr. Martin, great. Thanks so much for joining.
All right, sir. We'll be on tomorrow.
I appreciate it. Many thanks to our good friend Kim Ullman for calling in. And until tomorrow, folks, that's it. Have a great night. Take care.